Johnson versus Carlson.
Good morning, Your Honors. Stephen Todd for the plaintiff, the appellant, Key Development Pension Plan. Mr. Johnson is the trustee, and the lawsuit was brought in his capacity as the trustee. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes.
2 minutes. All right. You may proceed.
I'd like to briefly explain how we got to where we are today. This is the second appeal in this matter. The first appeal was from the judgment entered by the trial court against the pension plan for $530-some thousand. This appeal is a result of the Carlson's garnishment of funds in the pension plan's bank account that was for disbursement to the pension plan participants. The pension today exists solely for the purpose of administering the remaining assets that are in the plan, which are promissory notes evidencing loans made from the pension funds.
That's a question I had about the factual posture here. The cash that is being paid as a result of those promissory notes is elsewhere? Because when they actually did the garnishment, they only got like $1,500.
There's only two promissory notes. The money dribbles in monthly. So at that time that the garnishment, that was all they got.
Okay.
I assume that the plan is dispersing the payments as they come in to the beneficiaries.
That's right. Both the remaining participants in the plan are both over the age of 70, retired.
So there's a window where you hit the bank account when the money's come in before it leaves.
Evidently. But that's what happened here. And although the amount is not great, the fact that this garnishment may proceed, the entire remaining assets in the pension plan are only approximately about $100,000. They managed to garnish some additional funds directly from the makers of the promissory notes. So they essentially can wipe out the entire pension plan by garnishing the payments as they come in.
Why doesn't this case fall within the sue or be sued clause? Why doesn't this fall within the sue or be sued clause?
Well, the sue or be sued clause lists what individuals can sue a pension plan for what types of relief. This was not a case brought under ERISA, and has no bearing, that provision in ERISA has no bearing on the Carlson's claim for that the notes were usurious. Clearly, the case relied on the Milgram case dealt with that statutory provision. Milgram himself was a person allowed to be sued under the sue or be sued clause, and this is not the case with the pension plan.
Would your position essentially make a qualified plan judgment proof?
It does. Well, if the plan has no other assets.
I'm an accountant, and you want, as a pension plan, want to hire me to perform services. Do I have to get my money up front or have no remedy when you don't pay?
No, I believe that both ERISA and the state exemption law allows for the payment of reasonable expenses for plan administration under ERISA or valid obligations for the benefit.
ERISA allows that, but under your theory, how would the accountant sue and then collect his judgment if he didn't get paid? Assume he doesn't work as a plan employee, but as a third-party service provider.
He would sue, and under the qualifier of the exemption statute under the state, if he established that it was a valid obligation for the benefit of the plan, then clearly the overall exemption doesn't apply.
Okay, let me turn it on its head. pension plan employee is driving a car and is in a car accident, at fault, third party sues. Not for the benefit of the plan. Can he garnish?
I don't think so, because I think the overall policy of protecting a pension benefit that a person is entitled to or may be entitled to overrides the third party's ability to collect on damages. I don't think that. Of course, it depends on the circumstances, the car accident, but I don't see how a car accident was any benefit.
How would the circumstances affect the answer you give?
Well, I suppose if the employee is doing something that actually benefits the plan, I don't know what it would be, but I can see an argument being made that this person would not have been in a driving the car on pension plan business if it wasn't for the benefit of the plan.
The plan here doesn't have a separate bank account that it uses for its internal expenses and a separate account to payment out to beneficiaries?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
It has this one account, and again, because the plan no longer takes in money, profit sharing or anything like that, there are no employees that contribute to the plan. They simply administer the remaining assets. When the money comes in, it goes out. They have to file, obviously, year-end reports with the IRS, but those are nominal expenses, and there are no major expenses. There's no rent. There's a consultant fee that does the filing of the returns or the forms necessary for the IRS. But other than that, the plan that exists today doesn't have any expenses.
Since this case was decided, there's been garnishment of from the holders of the note or the makers of the note.
One of the notes.
So, but the benefit doesn't become a benefit until the note obligor pays to the plan, and then the plan disperses it to the pensioners, right? So just the money sitting in the account, it isn't theirs, it isn't their benefit until it's paid out, right?
It isn't the participants?
Right.
Well, I believe it is, because under the statutory scheme, under the exemptions to judgment, the Supreme Court has ruled that once the money is actually distributed, it doesn't have any benefit of the exemption statute. Therefore, it's not exempt. You can go after money once it's distributed. So the only way that statutory exemption makes any sense is
it's only true for an obligation of the recipient of the benefit, isn't it? The plan's creditor can't go after the money once it's in the pensioner's hands, can it?
Oh, of course not.
Yeah.
Once it's been distributed, it belongs to the person, but the statute doesn't distinguish between who the creditors are. It just says that pension benefits are protected, and that stream of income is an important public policy to ensure that that result.
All right, you have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Marcia Ellsworth. I represent Clyde and Priscilla Carlson's, the defendants in this case. We're asking this court to affirm the trial court's decision denying the garnishment exemption. I think the sole issue before the court this morning is, can a judgment creditor who has a judgment against a pension plan relating to a state law claim collect on its judgment using state law judgment collection procedures such as a garnishment? I think that question was considered and answered very clearly in the Mackey case, a U.S. Supreme Court case that specifically addresses these types of situations. There's been discussion in both parties' briefing about whether ERISA applies, how it applies, what is preempted, what isn't preempted. And that's all an interesting intellectual discussion. I think at the end of the day, we're in agreement on this was a state law lawsuit. It was started out as just, as the Mackey case said, a run-of-the-mill state law case. It was a collection case on a promissory note. The pension plan filed a lawsuit in Skagit County Superior Court, took advantage of the hospitality offered it there, prosecuted the case, and in fact lost the case on the affirmative defense of usury. And they had, the pension plan had a very large judgment entered against it as a penalty for violating the usury statute.
The appellants argue that when you read Guidry, the United States Supreme Court recognized the difference between welfare benefits and pension benefits, and that Mackey was addressing pension benefits. Does that distinction make a difference to the principles you just articulated?
No, not at all. And I think when you read the federal Supreme Court cases and the other federal court cases interpreting the Supreme Court cases, there is a variety of whether they are welfare benefits or pension benefit cases, but the principle is the same. And those cases are speaking to frequently are whether there's a preemption issue or not, and whether the case relates to the plan and the whole preemption issue should be considered. In this case, that's not an issue. This is clearly a state law claim, and I think Mackey clearly addresses that state law claims are subject to state law collection procedures such as garnishment. And as
but there's no real dispute between the parties that this is an ERISA plan, but it's an ERISA pension plan, right?
Correct. There's no dispute on that. And I think your honors were very correct in pointing out earlier that this is no different than a failure to pay a service provider, a car accident, a breach of contract case, or if a pension plan failed to pay its rent. How does that creditor get satisfaction from the judgment if the pension plan refuses to pay, which is what's happened in this case? And it's, again, Mackey is very clear. State court collection remedies are available to satisfy judgments because the assets belong to the plan. They're plan assets. They're not pension benefits until they're distributed by the plan to the beneficiaries. At this point, the money's sitting in a bank account. At some point, it may ripen, whether it's a day, a month, a year, it may ripen into benefits.
Should there be any different rule based upon the circumstance that this is a plan with essentially no administrative expenses and two recipients and no contributors?
No, I don't believe it does. And in fact, I think that raises some other interesting issues which aren't before this court, but that's basically an alter ego theory of, because let's take that one step farther, that this is a plan created by these two gentlemen in which they were able to shelter significant amounts of income during their working life to be distributed to them upon their retirement, as long as they followed some particular rules and do their...
Well, they'd only been able to do that just for themselves if they'd had no other employees, would they?
Right. And for a number of years, they did have some additional employees, but none of those employees have been part of the plan for several years, and several years before
this
case.
Well, these are just the last two men standing.
Right, the last two men standing. But whether it's a small business plan such as this one or a large plan that owns real estate and rents large buildings, there's no distinction under the law as to those plans being able to be exempt from execution of judgments. And I think when you look at RCW 6.15.020, it addresses that specifically at the end of paragraph 3, where it states, this subsection does not prohibit actions against an employee benefit plan or fund for valid obligations incurred by the plan or fund for the benefit of the plan or fund. And there was a discussion earlier about what is a valid obligation incurred by the plan, and I'd like to address that. In this case, The plan decided to bring a lawsuit against my clients regarding the promissory notes. That the plan decided that was a valid obligation for its benefit. Unfortunately, things didn't go according to plan for the pension plan, and they lost their lawsuit. There is a consequence, a clear consequence to bringing that lawsuit, which was clearly, and I think the plan would admit, for the benefit of the plan and the beneficiaries, but they lost, and a judgment was entered. And the assets of the plan that are in the bank account are not exempt from garnishment or collection, and there's no support anywhere in the law for that position. And accordingly, we ask this court to affirm the trial court's decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I want to address the Mackey case that you brought up, and the distinction between welfare benefit plans and pension benefit plans, because the court in Mackey did find a difference. In fact, found that welfare benefit plans don't have the same protections as pension benefits, and that's why they held that the I think it was a South Carolina or North Carolina statute. Conflicted with ERISA's overall scheme. Eventually, since they determined that that was not a valid avenue for collecting on these judgments in Mackey, they reverted to the overall garnishment statute, which didn't exempt anybody. And so that was the reason that the welfare pension benefits were allowed to be garnished. This is a difference between this pension fund. And the court in Mackey stated as much, that Congress decided that they were going to protect pension benefits but not welfare benefits. It was a choice that they made, and therefore a state law that contradicted what the Congress did would not be a valid exercise of the state's power. I also want to address this fact that the pension benefits are not benefits belonging to the participants. Clearly, if RCW 615-0203 means anything, it means that the funds, while in the pension, are protected from judgment creditors of the participant. So the money does belong to them. Otherwise, there would be no need to have the statutory exemption for pension benefits.
Thank you. Thank you.